The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hello and welcome to Contemplations, where we take a topic that isn't necessarily current news and we break it down because we think it is both interesting and valuable. And I'm joined with Hugo today. Hi. And I'm Josh, and we're here to talk to you about the various voting systems and whether there is one that is particularly good or not.
Yep. And we're going to follow up on yesterday's discussion where we talked about how voting systems and electoral systems actually affect party systems and what consequences they have in politics. And so we kind of agreed on that party systems have, that electoral systems have quite a large influence on on the outcomes, but in various ways. So you can't say that it's a certain party or a certain political idea or ideology that would benefit from it. There are some systems from which mm-hmm. have characteristics that mean that some number of large parties benefit from that of established parties benefit mm-hmm. from that system at the expense of other parties that could challenge them. So there are systems like that, but we'll get into more detail mm-hmm. What these systems are and what their drawbacks and advantages are.
Yeah, just to reiterate a little bit about the discussion, we did talk mainly about first past the post because it's used both in the UK and the US, India as well. Mm-hmm. So a large number of countries in the world, and it's something that I feel particularly strongly about, which is why I was very focused on reforming this.
Mm-hmm. And so the first past the post system is used in many countries, especially in the Anglophone countries, mm-hmm. and it's actually not the type that is the most used. The most used is the proportional system, but that is a bit of a misnomer because there's loads of systems that are kind of under this one umbrella.
Yes, it's definitely an umbrella term to represent a large number of various different proportional systems.
And so we're kind of going to break down these lines a little bit mm-hmm. to see what these systems actually are and what whether it makes sense to group them together or not, or according to what criteria. And so if we want to answer the question which voting system is best, well then we have to establish according to which kind of baseline, right? We have to have some way of ranking them. And so voting systems, what they do is to take individual preferences, because each individual has different preferences for parties or for candidates, and they have their rankings in their heads of like preferences of one candidate over another, and like a list of candidates in the order of preference. And then those individual preferences have to be in some way translated into a group preference that then becomes what the election is gonna result in, the actual representatives. And that is the crucial part, because people have different preferences, so not everyone will get what they want, right? And you have to sort of mediate between what people want and aggregate that in some way that satisfies at least some number of people, and hopefully most people, maybe almost all of them, right? But this is hard, and this you can do this in a number of ways. So you have to find the best way to crunch the numbers so that you can translate those individual preferences into that aggregate, into that group preference that you want to then translate into electoral outcomes, into those people in power. And so what's the best way to do it? Well, actually, the question is, what do you want out of it? Because different systems satisfy different criteria. And so what are those criteria? Here you have the Wikipedia article that is a list of, I don't know, 20 maybe criteria that you can have for voting systems. And I would like to go over a couple of those just to show what they are good for, or what they actually do, like why would you care about those criteria. And then these criteria are useful for ranking those systems. So when you say, okay, I want this criterion because it makes sense for me, I want my system to satisfy that criterion, because otherwise the result is not going to be a quality result. And so then you can pick your electoral system based on the criteria that it can fulfill. And so I want to start with the top criterion on this list, which is the Condorcet criterion, which is the easiest way to say what it is that you have a Condorcet winner. I'm going to explain what it is, and then if a Condorcet winner is selected by your electoral system as the winner of the election, then the electoral system fulfills the Condorcet criterion. And so what is the Condorcet winner? The Condorcet winner is a candidate among several candidates that can win kind of a head-to-head match with each other candidate. So you have candidate A, B, C, D, for example, and a candidate A will win in a kind of fight against candidate B, and as well against candidate C and candidate D, so against any of them.
So this is kind of the principle in which First Past the Post operates under, where the candidate who gets the highest percentage mm-hmm. share of the vote is going to be the winner.
No. So what the voting systems do is to take rankings that people have of those candidates,
okay,
and aggregate them in some way, right? And so that's the input. The input is a list of preferences that each voter has of the candidates. So they have rank one candidate, rank two candidate, rank three, right? And so that's the list of preference. And then the Condorcet criterion is that if you take all those votes, all those ballots, all those preferences, all those lists of preferences of all the voters, and look at only two candidates in relation to one another, then you want to see whether they have more votes than the other candidate, right? So only those two. And so you compare A against B, and then you compare A against C and A against D in those lists of preferences.
Okay.
And so if candidate A can win the race against B, if there were only those two candidates, then it's Condorcet winner if it can do that thing against any of them.
Okay.
I don't know if I'm explaining it properly or not, but
so if people vote in a preferential style, mm-hmm. in that they have a list of preferred candidates, mm-hmm. the candidate who comes out as the most preferred from this list of candidates that the voters have supplied, mm-hmm. It eventually becomes the winner.
That would be the First Past the Post voting.
Okay, so
is it? So First Past the Post is just a system where the inputs are just across, mm-hmm. in near to like one name, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a special case, because what the whole input is people's ranking. And you can say, okay, I'm only interested in the top choice, and then you only collect the ballots with the top choice, which is the cross. But if you collected the full information that you can get from the voters, that would be the full ranking,
the ranked order.
Right? And so if you have all of that information, then that's what you start working with when you compare the electoral systems. And what first past the post does is that it ignores all the people that are ranked second or worse.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Condorcet winner is the winner that can beat all other candidates in a two-way race, right? So if you ignore all if you take all the preferences that those people have, mm-hmm. and if you were to remove all the other candidates and just take the preferences of candidate A and candidate B, then if let's say candidate A is the winner, and then you did the same thing, but for candidate A and C, and still A is the winner. So if candidate A wins in each of these head-to-head matches, then they are the Condorcet winner.
So in an example, if no matter what the electoral system, if there was a candidate that was so good that they could just beat anyone no matter what the electoral system was, as in people's preferences were so unanimously in favor of them, they could be described as the Condorcet
Not regardless of the election system, because this is the criterion for the election systems. So there are a lot of election systems that, mm-hmm. that would not fulfill the Condorcet criterion, which means that the Condorcet winner it is possible that the Condorcet winner would not win the election with that electoral system, right? So that is what makes it that criterion, right? So that's just one of those, mm-hmm. criteria that you can have for the electoral systems. And so another criterion that you can have, I just picked the ones that I found the most kind of interesting, or maybe the most relevant, or those that you could take like the most
useful, I guess.
Useful. For actually deciding how you want your representation, mm-hmm. to look. And so the other one that I'm going to mention is the independence of irrelevant alternatives. And so that just means that if you have a set of candidates and you add another candidate to that set, that doesn't affect the chances of the relations between the others.
Sure.
Right. So if you have candidate A and B, and candidate A is ranked by the majority as higher than candidate C, and then you have candidate B, and then you have a candidate C that comes in, that candidate doesn't change the fact that A is ranked above B.
Sure. So it doesn't, this new candidate, mm-hmm. doesn't detract votes necessarily, or at least to a point where there's a shift between which candidate,
yep.
originally, yeah. Was in the lead.
Yeah, and these criteria are like strong. So it's not like you can do one election and say, okay, it fulfills the criteria. But the criterion, it means that whatever the distribution of votes is, that is never broken, right? So mm-hmm. so this means that you cannot have any candidate, however strong, that would change the relation between those candidates that are already there. Right, and so first past the post obviously fails this test because if you have a third candidate that comes in to existing two candidates, well that can change the relation, that can flip those two candidates.
Yeah, because it splits the vote, doesn't it? Yeah,
exactly. And so that's one important criterion, I think, which you can have for your systems.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying that. If you have another candidate that wasn't there before, that can't change the relations between the ones that were previously there, because those were kind of decided based on the actual rankings of the people of the voters that they submitted in the elections, right? And so a third criterion that I wanted to mention is the majority criterion, and that is very simple. It just says that if a candidate is ranked first by more than 50% of voters, the candidate must win, which is something that is very kind of easy to formulate, and it's much easier to explain than the first.
Would there even be an electoral system where this wouldn't be the case, where a candidate gets over 50%, and then they're like, well, actually you don't win.
We can look into that later. I don't know that from off the top of my head, but I can
it would seem very counterintuitive to have any electoral system where you get the majority of the vote and lose.
I mean, you can so you could have, for example, let's say that you have a candidate that is quite polarizing and that 55% of people have as their first choice, and then 45% of people have as their last choice. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have another candidate that is less polarizing, that is the second choice of 95% of the people, right?
Sure.
And so you could say that that an electoral system that would elect the second choice of 95% of the people would be preferable to the one that would elect the one that is the first choice of 55,
mm-hmm.
if it's the last choice of the remaining 45, right?
Yeah,
so that sounds kind of more reasonable than just saying, okay, if it's the majority, like, that she should be elected, right?
So I need to get my mind out of the first past the post system thinking as someone who's not even in favor of it.
And so that shows that this criterion is not necessarily something that you need to take into account, right? None of these are. So these are the criteria that you can have, and you have to select those criteria that you feel are reasonable, right? And if you think that it's more reasonable, for example, to be able to elect the person who is the second best choice of 95% of the people over the candidate that is the first choice for 55% of the people, but the last choice for the 45%,
mm-hmm.
then you don't want to use the majority criterion, and you don't want to use an electoral system that will conform to the majority criterion. Sorry, because then you won't have that choice, right? And So I can have some examples that confirm to that criterion, but then some of them also don't. So for example, you have approval voting, and I'm just going to quote here. I just found that now it is ambiguous whether approval voting satisfies the majority criterion. Approval voting is not a ranked voting method, whereas the majority criterion has been created for ranked voting methods. So not all. Not all electoral systems can be ranked or assessed according to each of the criterion, because you have different inputs that go into each of the different electoral systems. Yeah. And so that's another complication that you have. Well, so just move on to another good criterion, in which I think is the monotonicity criterion, which says that you can't be able to make someone lose by ranking them higher, or to make someone win by ranking them lower, right? So that is kind of counterintuitive as well, but just as in the last example, we were able to kind of find an example where this becomes relevant, then you can find a similar scenario where this becomes something that you need to consider.
I wouldn't have even considered that, like, ranking someone higher makes them more likely mm-hmm. to lose. Like, mm-hmm.
it seems
like a strange criteria, but okay.
So actually, just on the Wikipedia article on this criterion, there is a nice explanation of that.
Okay.
Where you have the center party, the right party, and the left party, and you have voters that submit their preferences for their first order preferences and second order preferences. And then you have kind of number of votes, and the votes are distributed in the way that it would kind of show this example working, right? And then you have that scenario laid out where you have a couple of people switching their votes from right to left. Well, the voters who have their preferences, their first preference being left party and the second preference being right party. If a couple of them switches to their first preference being the right party and their second preference being the left party, then if you have those other voters and votes aligned in the way that it works out well, then these voters will be able to disadvantage their own preferred party by ranking them higher. It's actually the case that it can happen, and it's difficult to explain when you don't have the table in front of you and kind of just,
okay.
So I don't want to really get into that because that's sure. it's a bit too awkward to explain and I get the
gist of it now. I know that it's not just an abstract thing and that it can come into play in a scenario.
Yeah, the key thing is that you can. You can have, it's just that there is a scenario where that can happen and where that becomes an important thing, because you don't want to be in a situation where if some part of the voters decide that they want to rank they want to make one of their parties the preferred party instead of the second preferred party, then that will harm that party instead of helping it, right? You wouldn't want that. So it is kind of an obscure criterion because it's not like that's going to happen a lot, but it can happen, and it's a real possibility that it happened. It's not something out of that you would need kind of an extreme example. It's something that would be rare, okay, but they would be reasonable, right?
So it's an example of something that would perhaps be worth keeping an eye out for, but may not actually...
Exactly,
come into play a lot,
but it is still important because you don't want that to happen.
Of course,
so it's something that you would probably want to take into account if you're ranking electoral systems, right? And then you have, for example, the participation criterion, which, your electoral system fails the participation criterion if abstaining from voting can help your candidate win, and that can happen as well, and that can happen particularly in. If you have a decision that's being made where there's quorum requirements, so if you need more than whatever 2/3 of people being present in order for a motion to pass, right, and you want to vote against that motion, and they don't have enough people to vote for that they have the majority that would vote for motion, but they don't have the quorum present.
So if you
come in, if you attend that meeting and you vote against, you will enable them to pass that motion just because you voted against. If you stayed home, it wouldn't have passed even though you were against it. And so that is the participation criterion that maybe you want your electoral system to pass. So you don't want
in between the kind of 51% to the 66% kind of in favor of.
Well, that depends on what the quorum requirement is, and this is not something that usually happens in electoral systems. It's something that happens in referendums, for example, and so you have that in practice affecting kind of different ways. It's not something that would be a major problem in an electoral system because there's no quorum requirements there, right? And so you could maybe tie it together with the requirements that 5%. Let me think for a bit. No, I don't think you can easily make the case that this is really important for your electoral system outside of very specific circumstances that might be rare. But maybe I'm wrong here. But I think this particularly applies to referendum and things like that.
I'd agree.
And so then you have the last one that I want to mention, which is reversal symmetry. So that's also a bit difficult to imagine, but it says that if A is a unique winner, and if you were to reverse all the individual rankings of the candidates, then A could not be the winner. And that can also happen under some electoral systems.
Wait, so if someone wins through a certain preferential voting system, but if they reverse the preferences, they lose, then that's a bad thing. Surely that's...
No. It's that... So it is a criterion. So it says that you fail at that criterion if that happens.
Okay.
Right? If someone who is a winner in that electoral system... If you take the same preferences of those people who made that person a winner, and then you just flip them, flip the rankings, and if that person still becomes winner, Okay. Then your alcohol system fails this criterion, and that can happen. It's just quite interesting, quite fun, and like that even that can happen, right? So you have a lot of these. You have a lot of these different criteria, and some of them are quite fun to talk about because they seem like that's something that could never happen, but then it sometimes does, and you don't want to be in a situation where the electorate. And an election turns out in a way that produces some kind of this bizarre result.
Like no matter how you look at the results, the same person wins over and over.
Yeah. I mean that's not exactly what this
I know,
is. But if you flip it, just scramble it, then that wouldn't be the case, right? And so this is just something that I wanted to go over because this is very important. Because if you want to rank electoral systems. You need to know according to which criteria you do it. And then you have loads of criteria and you have to select those which you find important and reasonable that you'd want your electoral system to fulfill. And then you have another problem, which is that some of these criteria go against each other. So that actually, it's actually impossible for you to fulfill all of those criteria. So you also need to pick those that actually work together and that don't.
Yeah, it's about trade-offs, isn't it, between certain criteria rather than maximizing all of them.
Yep. And so with that out of the way, I wanted to shift a bit to the actual electoral systems and what their kind of main divisions are. Mm-hmm. So you have this high level definition that is not often used, but is used in relation to decision making in general, which is either majoritarian or consensus based. And the idea is that with some procedures, what you're interested in is just to take the majority point of view, and then that's what's going to happen. And well, that's the one side, and the other side is that you try to in some way involve a lot of the people that are, or as many people that are present as possible. You could have complete consensus, which would be unanimity, or you could have some other procedures that could be unanimity -1 or -2 or something like that, just to allow for some more flexibility, because then you can't have that one person who holds up. Right? Mm-hmm. And so that division is kind of important as well in those electoral systems, because for example, first past the post would be a very much majoritarian system. It's designed to just take whoever is the biggest group, and then those people will win, and the rest are disregarded. Just like broadly, if we just put it crudely, that's
in an example though. We've had it in the UK. I think it was in 2005 where Labour formed a government and they only actually got 35% of the vote. So. Yep. They were in power, even though just over a third of people voted for them.
And so consensus-based would then be systems that would take into account those people who weren't in the largest group that would win under the majoritarian system, right? Mm-hmm. They would not necessarily that they would make them have what they want, but that they would at least have some input in what's going to happen in the end, right? And so that's where you have different algorithms, different ways to crunch the numbers to produce a result that would be more consensual like that in terms of everyone who's present or everyone who voted. Well, then you can often rephrase that into plurality and proportional, as I said. That's kind of what it is often called when you apply that division into electoral systems specifically. And so plurality, again, that's the majoritarian system. That's just what it's called. The first past the post would be an example of a plurality-based system. And proportional systems then would be the ones that take into account the proportion. Yeah,
I mean, so they would normally be more preferential in the kind of in the ballots that voters receive. They would have a preferential system that might tally up their votes, and therefore the percentage of votes for certain candidates would translate better in that system.
Yep, exactly. And so then another division that you can have is single winner and multi-winner. So if you take if you just take a presidential election, that's a typical single winner election where you need to have, by definition, a single winner, or a single constituency where you have a single representative, then you send off to the parliament or something like that. So that's a single winner. Multi-winner is something where just by voting you select, you as the voter can even vote for one, or you can vote for multiple. It doesn't matter. It's different models. But what is then done is that several winners are selected from it, and several of them have that position that comes from the total amounts of votes that they got in some way. That depends on how you crunch numbers. And so you could say that multi-winner is always preferable, because then you get more, a larger part of the vote that goes into selecting who the winner actually is. But that's sometimes not the case, because sometimes you need a single winner, such as in the presidential election. You can't have the two presidents just by the virtue of them being a president and of that office, how that works. So that's not, sometimes not an option. And sometimes you also want a single winner, because if you want a local representative, you want one person to be a local representative, because if you have localities and you select more local representative out of each small locality, then you can end up with a parliament that has thousands of people in it, and that's not very practical, right? So there's some limits on that as well. And so I know that one option is to you know, make them a little bit larger to offset that, kind of, to make that roughly equal.
That was what I was talking about in the last part.
Exactly. And so but that principle still stands. You don't want your parliament to be too big, because then it loses its purpose. And so then you can have either rank voting or approval voting. That's another main division, where in rank voting you rank your candidates, and in approval voting what you do is basically put an X next to the candidate that you approve of and leave blank the candidate you don't disapprove of, or the other way around. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Point is that they're not ranked. They're either, some of them are 100, some of them are 0, and that's it. Right. So that's the two kind of differences, that different inputs that you can have. And so according to those, electoral systems are then divided. Well, and that's all important to kind of consider, because it's not like you have an option between one voting system and then another one, and that would be it, just two existing. There's like dozens and maybe hundreds, and you want to pick the one that fits you the most, but then you can't just make an A-B choice, right? It's not like we have the first past the post versus the single transferable voting system, and that there's the only two options that we have. And I know that's not...
Well...
They're just to kind of present the whole kind of range of how the systems can vary and what they can do and what they can't do, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now we can go into specific options. So we can actually start with single transferable voting.
The best one.
Because that's I know that you like that. So we can start with that as the first example of what other electoral systems can look like, other than what we might know in the Anglophone countries as the first past the post system that is in place in many of them now.
So this is one that is mainly geared towards electing legislatures. It wouldn't really work for, say, a presidential election, which I personally believe would be better under a ranked system where you rank your preferences, which seems to work better, because then that also eliminates the vote split, like I previously mentioned in the first part. In the 1992 election,
are they not ranked? So sorry to interrupt, but are they not ranked in the single transfer voting?
Yeah, but it wouldn't work because it's constituency based. In that, it's not geared up for for just voting for one person. It's a system that is dependent upon there being a constituency, and you elect multiple members, and then based on the percentage of votes for certain people, in which the votes are ranked in order of preference, it draws up multiple candidates who can either be from the same party or different parties, and it allows people to not only pick between candidates in the same party, but it also allows them to rank their preferences so they don't have to vote tactically if they if their first choice is actually unlikely to be elected. Mm-hmm. So it allows for third parties to succeed more in elections than perhaps another system such as First Past the Post, which is used currently in the UK and US.
So just to make that a little bit more explicit, what you do in single transfer voting is that you have the ballot, and on the ballot you rank your choices.
Yeah, so you number them like one to however many you want.
Exactly.
And you get to, you can go all the way to every single candidate, or you can number as many as you want, and you can say, well, up to five candidates, and then I don't want my vote to be counted.
Yep. And so then how the votes are counted is that there is a quota that is established according to a formula that is not important here, but you have a quota that if the candidate passes the quota, then they get elected. But if they don't pass the quota, which means that they would not be popular among the majority or like a lot of people, then no one wins. And if no one wins like that, then you eliminate the last person in the race and take their votes and add them to the totals.
Yeah.
Add the second choice from the people who had the one who is eliminated as their first choice.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you do that repeatedly as long as no one has reached that quota. Right. And when you have that first candidate reaching that quota, then that gets taken away, and then you do that process again until you have enough people reaching that quota that how many you want in that constituency, which can be, for example, like three in one constituency.
Sure. Right. It certainly sounds a lot more complicated than perhaps other electoral systems, which I will concede, like using First Past the Post, logistically, it is very easy because you've just got to see the cross on the piece of paper. That's easy to do logistically. But I feel like the sacrifice of the time in which people have to spend to count the votes is worth the increased proportionality of the final outcome, because the actual percentage of votes corresponds far better to the elected representatives in a legislature.
And so then you said that single transfer voting is mainly a concept that applies for constituencies, right?
Yeah.
And then of course that gets aggregated to the national level. A special case of, or what I call this, I think it's a special case of single transferable voting is the instant runoff voting, which is sometimes called the alternative vote, which is a vote for one winner, whereas in the broader case you can have multiple winners in the same constituency, right? And so in the instant runoff voting, you instead do the same process that I just described, but you do that just for that one winner. So you have a certain threshold that you need your candidate to reach, and if no one reaches that in the first round, quote unquote round, then you eliminate the last one and you add those votes to the previous ones according to those voters' second choices. And you do that as long as you need until one of the candidates reaches that threshold.
And for that alternative vote system, there was actually a referendum in 2011 in which...
In the UK.
Yeah, it was in the UK, which was by the coalition government, which was both Conservative and Liberal Democrat. And the Liberal Democrats wanted electoral reform towards a more preferential system, and the Conservatives were perfectly fine with First Past the Post because they stood to benefit and they get a far larger share, perhaps a disproportionate share, it would be fair to say, of seats in Parliament through that system. So they didn't want to change it. So rather than perhaps denying the Lib Dems altogether, they said, okay, we'll let you have alternative vote, which they weren't necessarily a big fan about because it has its flaws. And I think that also reflected in the vote, because only 32% of people voted in favour for it, whereas 67.9% voted against it to keep first past the post. I think even the Lib Dems were kind of a bit lukewarm about voting in favour of this.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not like instant runoff voting or alternative vote. That is already used in some countries. It's used in Australia. That's kind of the most famous example. It's used in some other countries as well. And so you have this in place, and it's not something that would be experimental, right? It's not like that.
Yeah, it's still a system that's used around the world.
And it's also something that mitigates some of the problems of first past the post, but also has a lot of the problems that first past the post has. So it mitigates some of them. It's not, as far as I know, it's not worse than first past the post in anything, but it's not better in many things.
Yeah,
only in some things.
It creates as disproportionate outcomes as first past the post does, really, in terms of the national election. Like, you still have that disconnect between the percentage of votes nationally and the seats in parliament, and it still has that same kind of deviation to the two main parties that you find in first past the post.
And so then another example that I want to look at is mixed member proportional voting, which is sometimes called something else in Britain, because everything is called something else in Britain.
And I know it is just MMS. That's how I learned about it. But
maybe. That's a language barrier between the English-speaking world and the rest of the world. But, sorry.
That's all right. You're forgiven.
So mixed member proportional voting is for example, used in New Zealand, right? And what it is that it's quite easy to actually take a first past the post system and switch it to this system, because what you need to do is logistically quite easy. And what you do is you take, you double the size of the parliament, which might be difficult when your parliament is over 600 people, but
yeah.
But when it's smaller, then it's easier. Also, like, you can change it later. Constituencies,
I mean, in the UK, it would be 1,300 representatives.
That's not really realistic. But for some other countries, it might be. And so then half of the seats come from constituencies from first past the post elections, as they have. Like, that doesn't change. But then you add the second half, and that second half gets elected from in kind of a compensatory manner, kind of together with the first half, right?
Yeah, I remember this.
Right.
It's
and so what you do as the voter is that you vote for one candidate out of the list of candidates, and you vote for a party out of the list of parties. And what happens behind the scenes after you vote is that first the individual candidates are kind of rounded up, all their votes are counted, and first past the post is applied, and you have half of the parliament being filled in this way based on first past the post. But then the second part is where people had crossed their favorite parties, and that gets rationed, like the rest of the the rest of the seats in parliament get rationed based on who is the most underrepresented in the first past the post half that's already been assigned, right? And so if you have one party that has, like, whatever, is like 40% of the national vote, but has 70% of the seats, out of that half,
then they wouldn't get any of the additional party list seats, or they might get a few, but less than other parties.
And so you look at all the parties and you see which is the one that is the most underrepresented, and then you add a seat to it, and then you do it again, and because those percentages changes as you add those seats to the parties, then you keep adding those according to the party that is always the most underrepresented. And then when you come to a point where no one is underrepresented, then you stop that.
So that seems relatively good for proportionality, but in terms of actually having local representatives that correspond to your views, these additional list candidates, do they actually correspond to local areas? I imagine that they wouldn't. They would just be people that were kind of parachuted in.
Yep.
I think the term is just to kind of fulfill these quotas. So it just allows parties to say, well, we know that we're going to be somewhat underrepresented, so we can guarantee we're going to elect these people as well. So it also means that if people who are popular within a party but are not popular with the electorate, a party could just put them at the top of this list and say, well, we can get them in anyway. We don't need to actually run them in a seat because they're not going to get it, but we can get this person in. So if they're unpopular for any reason with the public, but they're still in favour in the party, they're still going to be
represented. The thing is that the lists are public up front. You need to say before the election what your list is going to be. And so if you have those unpopular people on the top of the list, you will drive away some of the voters, and not from some of your better candidates, because they can still vote for them in those constituencies, but you will have fewer votes if you put up on the top your unpopular candidates. And so then if you do that and you lose some votes because of that, you will lose that kind of advantage of being able to put anyone in there, because you won't actually be underrepresented, because people will be voting for you less.
I've actually seen the ballot papers for these systems, and I know that it's just the name of the political party. Yes. So although I certainly feel that people would be put off by these undesirable candidates, I feel like it would be perhaps easier to get them in because when it actually comes to the ballots, it's just the name of the party and people don't see the list. So if they haven't gone to the trouble of reading this list, then perhaps it might make it a little bit easier.
That was
the point I was trying to make, but I didn't add that caveat, I suppose.
No, that is definitely true. I mean, this is a problem, but then of course on the other side you always have that risk of alienating some of your voters, or maybe a lot of them, right? And so you don't really, I guess it's a bit complicated for you if you want to be sneaky like that as the party, but it is a possibility. Of course, it's something that is less transparent than if you vote for a candidate directly.
To bring things back to single transferable vote, that's one of the strengths of that voting system, in that all of the people who end up in the parliament or legislature are directly elected by people. There's no shortlist, and although people might be voting for the party, they're going to be in single transferable vote. They deliberately vote for specific candidates, and if there are candidates in a particular party that are especially unpopular, well, people can still vote for other candidates in that party and perhaps candidates in another party over this unpopular person. So they get a better representative overall from the view of the voter.
Yep, I agree that from this point of view, in this particular from this particular consideration, single transferable voting is superior to mixed member proportional voting. So the last one that I wanted to go in a bit more detail is approval voting, which is a system where you have a list of candidates and you make a cross next to the candidate where you approve of them. That's what I already mentioned in the beginning. And you leave out those candidates that you don't approve of. Or you can be that way. Right, it can be disapproval voting, where you cross the candidates that you disapprove of. It doesn't matter. It's just reverse. But so from those candidates, then based on how many seats you want to fill, you just take the ones that have the most approval crosses, right? And that's quite easy to do. Well, you might say that that's superior to one system or another, but the problem with this is that it's a tactical nightmare. If you actually think it through, what that produces in terms of people strategizing and deciding on who they're going to actually give the cross to and who they won't. They will be strategizing about that. So they will take into consideration what other people are voting like, and so they will try to put their best candidate forward, maybe at the expense of the next best, even though the next best might be closest, if they believe that that enough people will be voting for the next best as well. And so that creates kind of this game of like chickens, like who's going to chicken out the first, right? Because if you have, so an example, if you have like a political compass, whatever, and you have two candidates that are quite close together, and then one candidate that is quite far away from them. And if you have that, then, and for example, you have majority of voters who would like one of these two, who are like in that space and not in that space, and the minority of voters who are in that space. Well, then if you have these two candidates, well, their voters might say, okay, I want one of them over the other, and therefore I'm just gonna give the approval to the one and not to the other, because I want that one. Well, that one is slightly better than the other, even though the third one is much worse. And then the voters for the other one will say the same thing. They will say, okay, I would rather the one that is slightly closer to me, so I'm just going to leave out the cross for the other one as well, because I'm just going to vote for the best one for me. And then their incentives are aligned so that they will do this to the point where none of those candidates will receive enough votes to be the third one, and the third one wins. That's further away from.
So it splits the vote in a way similar to first past the post.
Exactly.
In that you've got to vote tactically, especially when candidates are close together ideologically or in policy.
And you could say, okay, if they're close together, it's not that important, and that like people should get over themselves and just give the cross to both of them. But like that's not what people are going to do. You know, people are perfectionists often, or they will be overconfident in terms of how much of lead those two candidates have over that third one, things like that, right? So
it's natural for people to want to maximize their utility
when
it comes
to
voting. So
you can't expect them not to.
Yeah.
And so things like that can happen quite frequently and quite easily in approval voting, so that it might be an improvement in some ways over first past the post, but it's not exactly an improvement because there's similar problems. It can generate a lot of different issues, different tensions in its own right.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like it.
And so last, I just wanted to mention one website that Josh found that is the electoralreform.org.uk that lists quite nice way the types of voting systems, well, only some of them, because as I said, there's dozens, maybe hundreds.
It's a UK specific website, that's why.
Yeah, and so it has these kind of little snapshots of what each voting system is like. It has nine, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, it has nine, and so you can see a little bit of detail about each of those, and they're like they're an advocacy website, so they're not really focused on too much thoroughness or being very specific about things. So they have three criteria: proportionality, voter choice, and local representation, according to which they rank those systems. But these criteria are kind of vague and they don't really say how they're assessed, so it doesn't really matter. I mean, it's just a good snapshot of what those systems can be and how they differ.
It doesn't matter because they support single transferable vote, which is the right choice, of course.
Yeah, I could say that.
I couldn't resist, I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. It's all right. I mean, I'm not opposed to single transferable vote or anything like that. Like, I think that's can be one of the better ones, even though we need to first define according to which criteria we're going to rank them. So, which we haven't done.
Sure.
So just to conclude this whole thing, because it's been quite a lot of information and we've been talking about, I mean, jumping here and there every now and then, and so. To conclude, there's no single best system just by the virtue of you being able to choose different criteria, and some of the criteria can't be fulfilled at the same time and are mutually exclusive, and so you can't fulfill any criteria that you come up with. And so it just depends on the criteria that you choose. You might think that some of the criteria are more important than others, and then you'll want your system to satisfy those criteria. And because of that, you can't just say that one is the best before just actually agreeing on the criteria.
Sure.
And you could say, well, almost everyone would agree on these three or four criteria. And then if everyone does, then we can say this one is the best. Mm-hmm. And you can definitely do that, and people can do that.
I disagree. I can categorically say that a single transferable vote is definitely the best, and every other system is rubbish. That is mine. No. Being serious though, I feel that the reason that I'm such an advocate for it is because it prioritizes competition between representatives and free competition. Obviously, with more innovation, it's a very economic argument, but it is true. And also, voters get better choices overall. And alongside that, there's a bit better representation than perhaps other systems.
If you order it within 30 minutes, you'll receive a new set of kitchen knives.
I mean, I'm not being paid by this website.
No, that wasn't serious. I mean, I agree that obviously you won't get kitchen knives, but at the same time, like I agree that a lot of you have these advantages that are there and that are quite tangible in comparison mm-hmm. to first past the post, definitely. So it's not something that I would dispute. I think that it's fair for you to advocate that. Like this, it's not something that would be crazy or bad or something like that.
I don't think it's something that just generally speaking that people tend to think about. Mm. Like it's a very technical thing to look at the voting system. So most people who actually do take part in the system don't question how it's formulated. And I mean, to most people, the person who gets the most votes winning is a very intuitive thing. Yep. Like it doesn't seem that bad, but when that is tabulated on a national level, it doesn't seem to translate quite as well to actually representing the views of the people that the representatives are meant to represent. Mm. And I think that's the crux of why I'm such a strong advocate for this system.
I can understand it completely. Mm-hmm. And I just want to add that beyond just maths and how that works out, the electoral systems can produce different cultures, and they can affect things outside of politics, right? Mm-hmm. So you will have different behaviors and different kind of psychological phenomena that will result from that just because politics is such an important part of our societies, right?
I think that particularly apathy towards politics with voting systems where you have to vote tactically, where your votes might not count or where it may not actually amount to anything, is probably counterproductive. And perhaps if you want to get more people to participate in politics or take a greater understanding, or should I say have a greater understanding of politics, then it would be beneficial to have a system where people actually feel like they're going to get something out of turning up to vote, when there are a lot of people who live in constituencies where they may be in the minority, they know they are, so what's the point in even turning out to vote? And I think that's a very tangible thing that many people feel, that if they go to the polls, what's the point? I'm not going to be able to get the candidate who I want, so it's just a symbolic gesture, really.
And also, just even beyond that, in like life outside of politics, you can have electoral systems affecting that. So if you have first past the post system that where what it is exactly how we talked about yesterday, kind of this kind of sports match, right? That will create kind of teams in society and different identities around it, right? So it can produce like these different things, and it's not just something that occurs in one system or another, and so. Because you have these things outside of politics that are also influenced by electoral systems, weirdly enough, then you might, if you decide to switch to another electoral system than what you have now, you might gain something in electoral politics in representation or something like that. You might also lose something elsewhere, right? And so it doesn't automatically mean that if the system is mathematically better according to a lot of these criteria or some that you choose, that it is that this is going to be the only effect that it will have, because it will also have an effect outside of politics.
Sure.
So that's the last thing that I kind of wanted to mention. Yeah.
And that I think if you are perhaps in the UK and you vote Labour or Conservative, it certainly makes some sense to preserve first past the post, although I don't necessarily agree with you. From a tactical standpoint, it maximizes the number of seats that they get. And the same goes for in the United States, where Democrat and Republicans get the same kind of national boost overall relative to the proportion of votes.
Yep, exactly. Right, and so I think I'd ended there, because that's kind of the takeaway that I wanted to mention at the end, that if you're thinking about changing politics, also think about how it's going to change things outside of politics.
That's always a good point.
Yep. All right.
So, thank you very much for watching, and goodbye.
And you can find us at lotuseaters.com. And if you like this, you can support us and become a premium member as well.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.